Welcome back to Relatively Football, a women's football podcast hosted by siblings Theo and Flo. I'm Theo in New Orleans, very excited about 2021, very excited about women's football, and I'm with my sister via Zoom, Flo, in London. How's it going?
I'm all right. I'm in isolation. I'm getting ready.
Just all right.
I'm hunkering down and resting, sort of. Working from home. Everything continues. But yeah, technically in isolation at the moment.
Love it. Love it. Keep living the dream. Keep staying healthy. Keep broadening your ideas. So another huge week in women's football, Flow. They just keep coming, as we always say. But this week, kind of beyond a couple of cup fixtures in England, the big talking point for a lot of Twitter, amazing night on Twitter, was the NWSL draft. Flo, I'm sure you heard about this. Before we talk about it, I just wanted to kind of ask you, I put on Instagram about maybe what people feel about scrapping the NWSL draft, or do we think there is a future for the NWSL draft system? Obviously, in Europe, it's not a thing. It's very prevalent in every American sport, but it kind of feels like the NWSL maybe would do something different in the future, in the light of what's happened to Jess Fleming and Katerina Macario choosing not to go in the NWSL. So I just wanted to kind of put it to you. Do you think we could live in a future where the NWSL doesn't have a draft?
I think we could, based especially on how I think the NWSL are quite open to dialogue. And I think there's been talks, especially from the media, who have said in the last couple of weeks that the draft system is outdated and it needs to be changed, refreshed, whatever that new model might look like. And I think also there's probably a bit of resistance from clubs with the current situation, and I think I do get the vibe that the NWSL is quite open to a dialogue about this. Obviously I think there's some great pros to the draft. It creates a sense of fairness and opportunity, which in women's football in England, we're balancing right now because the richer clubs are sort of trying to lay down their dominance. Whereas obviously in a draft, everyone kind of gets a crack and a shot at getting some really good players.
If you had a salary cap without a draft, do you think that would kind of solve the issue? Or do you think the draft is kind of important to parity as well?
It depends what kind of salary cap you had, because I think there's always loopholes around salary caps, especially in women's sports or other sports where a lot of costs are kind of wrapped up in housing or supplementary bits of income. So I think for that reason, I think you kind of need something that you know is going to provide. And you also don't want to restrict people that want to invest. I think that's the important thing.
It's going to be an amazing time for the NWSL. Right before the draft, Lisa Baird announced that they had broken their membership or management with the kind of USSF. US Women's National Team is no longer managing the league. The league is going to try and be more autonomous, something we've talked about the WSL trying to do as well, moving away from the FA. And so I think it's going to be a really interesting time, these ideas of pay and draft and how this league kind of boosts these teams and makes sure the players are earning what they can. And there's also not this kind of antiquated kind of American system that doesn't really encourage more of a connection with European football, more of a connection with giving players what they want, playing for the clubs they want, rather than their kind of their rights going to different places.
Yeah, and I also think when you look at the way that men's sport has been run, especially in America, you know, a lot of people talk about women's sport as a massive opportunity to do something different. So should the NWSL just keep using a system that's worked in the men's but doesn't necessarily work for them just because it's what people are used to? Because it's not like they're a long historic league that, you know, can't move away from tradition, because this is the third time that a women's soccer league has started up and in the US, with two previous ones that went bankrupt.
Shout out to WUSA and the WPS.
Yeah, so so I think there is obviously a massive opportunity to ensure stability, and you know that maybe that looks like not having a draft anymore.
Cool. Well, the results on the Instagram poll was 86% of people, possibly a lot of Europeans or English people in there, did want to scrap the draft. So good luck staying with us, draft. Get into Wednesday night. It was a lot of fun. It was really bloody long, if you didn't stay up, listener. Right, it ended up clocking in at about 5 hours.
There were some good memes. There were some very good
unbelievable memes. We only had, after an hour and 10 minutes, we'd only had 5 picks. So really it was this kind of mammoth first round. After an hour and a half, there was only 10 picks. It was kind of an unbelievable night just in regards to this rule of having a timeout, which I think next year might be reviewed because it was kind of ludicrous that you had 5 minutes to make a pick and then you could take every round a 5 minute timeout and stop the clock and get on the phone or just... Some teams just seem to want to stop the clock and just sit there.
Just chill.
We're looking at you, Houston Dash, who didn't go, took them 3.5 hours to make a pick because of the way things were. And then when they got on the clock, they took a timeout and we were like, what have you been doing for 3.5 hours? And they didn't even trade the pick or anything. Anyway, so it was a really, really bloody long night. Big shout out to Soph Lawson, who sat through the whole thing.
That girl doesn't sleep.
Unbelievable stamina, probably, yeah, player of the match, player of the draft, performance. There was a lot of really, really great English people on when it started. Your Rich Laverty's, etc., Craig. But they all kind of, you saw them all, dissolve as the night went on. And it did get into the very, very early hours. Big takeaways for me was the diversity in the first round. 7, I think, out of 10 of the first round players were non-white. And yeah, really great to see like a slight change in the kind of very outdated stereotypes of like NCAA and American women's soccer or, you know, English women's soccer too. I think that was really cool to see. And then on the flip side of that, going around, you saw obviously you jumped to what the Americans call a war room, in quotation marks, this sort of strange room with a kind of pop-up table in the stadiums mostly where they're making these picks on their spreadsheets, on their Zoom calls. And these war rooms were really lacking in diversity. It feels like any British male coach over the age of 40 can go and get a job in the NWSL. And as much as I love British men, white British men over 40, it feels like that needs to change. So yeah, kind of really cool to see more diversity in the player group pool. And you kind of then were really seeing how stark the diversity was on the management side, which again, the NWSL is, I think, catching up to the WSL in that. I love... the management and the GMs and stuff, I think, in the WSL feel a little bit more ahead of the NWSL. That said, Sky Blue, all female team, almost all wearing the same outfit, was really great to see. And they even had a cutout of Meg Linehan, Flo. I'm sure you saw that.
I saw that. That was so bizarre, haunting them in the shadows.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have the... it was really putting the insider in NWSL insider. And I suppose that was the biggest talking point of the first round beyond Emily Fox became the first number one pick for UNC since Crystal Dunn. So she's in good company. Then Trinity
Robin. That
seems
a long time for one of the legendary sports teams in history, not even just women's football. Like, that seems a long time without a number one pick. I know Stanford have really kind of raised the game recently, but...
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's putting a lot of pressure on, like, the number one pick because, you know, 3 of the first round or definitely 2 of the first round were UNC or 3 of the first 11 picks were from UNC. So we're still talking about, you know, like you said, a very highly
dominant
team. I think maybe it's putting a lot of pressure on the number one pick, but UNC still features a lot. You're right, though. Stanford in this draft and more recently, players like Kelly O'Hara, Kristen Press have really, really come on from Stanford, so... There's definitely something there. Trinity Rodman, Flo, I think, was one of your favorite picks coming in at number 2. She's only 18. She's going to forego the NCAA by getting drafted.
I mean, obviously, the fact that she's Dennis Rodman's daughter is cool. I love to see families and, like, you know, dynasties like in that way. I think that's really cool. But I thought it was just really interesting that she's gone straight from high school because that's pretty rare. It's the kind of thing you see in England because we don't have a college sports system. So it's not rare to us, but it is quite rare for Americans, because even, you know, some of the best players in the world still decide to go to college because it felt like a core experience, even if they weren't going to stay all 4 years. So I just thought that was quite surprising.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that Mal Pugh, Ashley Sanchez, Sophia Smith, I think, I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm wrong, they've all been players who dipped in and then dipped and turned
pro.
Yeah,
I mean, very few of the biggest sports talents in the world in America will ever do all 4 years because it's almost just like a waste of time.
I feel like football, soccer has been a slightly different. I know, like, in basketball, the one and done is almost completely normalized now. But I feel like in soccer, usually you get 2, 3, 4. But I definitely think Trinity Rodman, obviously COVID is maybe a big reason for this. She didn't play any football. She had signed on to go to Washington State. But I think it's going to be really cool to see her development. And she's just arrived at a really great team. Washington Spirit picked her up at number two. And I think she's playing alongside Ashley Sanchez, who's one of the funnest dribblers to watch in the league. And I think it's just a great landing spot for a team that you think are just going to go out there and let her play and see her develop in real time.
I know also you put in our notes Lucy Parker,
I'm glad you're reading my notes.
And I think it's just interesting because we've obviously seen this current generation of UNC players includes a lot of exciting English talent. Alicia Russo, Lottie Webber-Moy. So I think it's quite interesting to see how the lure of college football is kind of persuading a lot of young English players to take time and go there. Grace Fisk, others.
Ruby Grant just left West Ham to go to UNC.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's interesting, but it seems like most of them do that with an eye on returning to the academies or the places, centre of excellence, is where they were before. So obviously, like, Lottie Webber-Moy's just come to straight back to Arsenal.
Patton as well, who just returned to Arsenal. Played with Grace Fisk at South Carolina,
So I just think it's quite interesting, and I wonder if I haven't actually looked at, like, I think I did go on Lucy Parker's wiki, but I can't remember where she may have played junior football. So I wonder if she is attached to a club back here that she might come back to, depending how she likes playing in the NWSL. She thought it was quite interesting because it's sort of one of the few where they've gone and stayed and envisioning, like, having a professional career there rather than, like, I'll go play really good quality football, also get a good education alongside of it, and then at the end of the day come back and play pro in England.
Yeah, I mean, Lucy Bronze played at UNC as well. Lucy Parker, for those that didn't see it, was the 16th pick in the second round, picked up by Kansas City. Really cool to see her. I didn't really know much about her. This one's one of those picks that kind of caught me off guard, but really cool to see an English player go, and I'm excited to see her progress playing at UCLA, which is a really good school. Though she did actually play at LSU for a bit, and then she transferred out west. Obviously she didn't get a senior season because the Pac-12 didn't play, so maybe we'll see what happens there. Just finishing up on other things I really liked about the first round, Brianna Pinto's family. Flo, did you see any of this? Amazing.
I did see some pictures on Twitter, and
so cute. That was a real bonus about the draft this year, being on Zoom. You just went straight into these, like, dorm rooms. So you saw these, like, cute, like, posters on the wall and, like, fairy lights. And then, sometimes you're in the family living rooms. And, Brianna Pinto, UNC player, goes third overall to Sky Blue. Her dad just says, all about that Pinto life.
On the Zoom?
On the Zoom. He was like, you're all about that Pinto life.
That's so cute. I just saw the screenshots. I didn't see any videos.
Which reminds me that Trinity Rodman's mum had a hat that said Team Trin.
Love that. I love the merch.
The merch between Team Trin and Pinto Life. It just felt like we were getting all these great... You're just so excited
to see
these players.
And Pinto, she UNC as well.
She's UNC, yeah. She looks really good. Really, she's obviously also a national team player like Trinity Rodman. So really excited to see that. Kiki Pickett was number four at Stanford. And she was, like, bopping along in her Zoom, getting ready to get drafted as well. So it was a real vibe.
Part of
the fun was just, like, being on Twitter and seeing it all happen. And Stanford, like you said, Flo, won the NCAA in 2017 and 2019. They're definitely getting a lot of love right now. And kind of staying on Kiki Pickett at number four, this was a big deal because Sky Blue actually traded out of they had the third and the fourth pick. They traded out of the fourth pick to Kansas City for $175,000 in allocation money. Flo, any feelings on that? Allocation money is pretty weird, especially from a WSL point of view. Would you have traded for the number four pick? For Kiki Pickett?
Well, I don't really know much about her player, so I'm not going to go into that. But I don't really necessarily understand how allocation money works. That's money that's coming from the NWSL given to the clubs to spend. And instead of spending it, they said, we'll give you this money and you can spend it and we will have a pick in the draft instead, right? Is there a limit into how much they can spend that money on one single player? Like, what I want to know is how much bargaining power do the players have in this? Not just from a draft point of view, but actually, like, what are the salary cap limitations right now? Because in England, although there are salary caps, they're pretty soft and you can get around it. So there is quite a lot of sort of capitalist bargaining, negotiating power on the individual players in contracts. Sometimes, not all the time, if there's like standardization. So I was wondering, you know, that 175, like, what does that mean? You know, is that probably just going to go to one big player? Is that going to go to several players? Like, you know,
I think it would go to one or two, because the base salary cap in the NWSL, for those that don't know, is $20,000 to $50,000 is your margin of minimum salary, maximum salary. But your allocation money is basically your overflow to get star players, often international players, or what we're seeing right now is US women's national team players who are not going to sign with the American FA. They're going to sign on an allocation contract. So essentially, it's basically saying Sky Blue now has more money to attract a star player. We'll see if they, you know, every team gets $300,000 to $400,000 allocation money. Sky Blue essentially now has $400,000 to $575,000. So it's basically Sky Blue can attract a star player, whereas Kansas have basically said, you know, in 2021, Kansas aren't going to get any star players. They're going to go and get Kiki Pickett. So I think it's a good deal for both. It's an enormous amount of money for the NWSL. So this was kind of a landmark moment where you saw everyone's mind blown. But I do think there's some calculated risk to it. I, like you, haven't watched much of Stanford, so I don't know much about Kiki Pickett, but she could well be worth it. You know, I'm a big believer, if you like a player, go and get her. You know, I don't think we need to necessarily say that, like, Sky Blue fleeced Kansas City, but time will tell. Anything else jump out to you, Flo, either from the first round, second round? We'll kind of just breeze over this. I'm sure listeners can go and find the list if they want to. Other things that jumped out to me was 50% of the first rounds from the Pac-12. Goes to show how good that college league is, and the Pac-12 didn't even play this year, so it kind of shows that a lot of these players are going off old tape, old games and stuff like that. Flo, any players jump out to you?
Not really. That's kind of, I mean, I didn't Lucy even Parker, dare yeah. I didn't even dare stay up to try and master that, but I am going to try and kind of watch back the whole thing on Twitch, all 5 hours of it at some point, and kind of look at some articles written by people who know far more about college soccer than I do.
Yeah, definitely check out the Equalizer and All for 11. A couple of ones I just want to get through, listener, are Amara Ali from Rutgers, taken by the Portland Thorns. I thought had a great draft, took so many great forwards. She was one of the highest ranking players coming out of high school. The clips I've seen on YouTube, she was one of the players I was really excited to kind of see what would happen to her. She was a back-to-back All-American, which for English listeners basically means she was in like the team of the year in 2018 and 2019. She didn't play in 2020 because of COVID. So she's a player with real, real, real high ceiling. Also a really great follower on social media, really outspoken about social justice, is a criminal justice major at Rutgers. So really excited to see her in the NWSL. She was taken in the third round, which seemed kind of low for, thought it was a bit of a steal for Portland Thorns getting her at 22. And then the other player, which I was really gutted about, was taken right after the two Houston Dash picks, was Hermina Lopez, who a couple of people on Twitter were saying might be linked with European clubs. She's a Mexican international already. She's 22. She's played 4 seasons at Texas A&M. She's amazing. Go and watch her on YouTube. Great character, great personality, really great leader. She's the captain at A&M, and she kind of can just play everywhere. And she, for me, felt like a perfect player for the Houston Dash because she's so versatile, is already playing in Texas. But she went with a 28th pick, which seemed like an absolute steal, to the Seattle Reign, OL Reign. And she played behind Ali Watt, who just got traded to the Reign. And I think it's going to be really cool to see them kind of collab. And this is a really weird stat. She was the 2019 SEC, which is the college division, midfielder of the year. And then she was the 2020 SEC defender of the year. So incredible versatility, 15 assists in 2019 as well. So she's really one to keep up with if she plays in the NWSL or if she goes elsewhere. Let's wrap it up there. And like I said, listener, you can find all other good NWSL chat elsewhere, but those are the ones that stuck out to me. Flo, a couple of big matches this week. Real Live Cup quarterfinals, Conti Cup. We had Bristol City beating Aston Villa 2-1 in an enthralling knockout fixture on Wednesday. And then a last-minute Tash Flint free kick gave Leicester their first ever semi-final place yesterday. Flo, this was a great advert for the Conti Cup and really sets up for an exciting semi-finals.
Yeah, I think it's been great, actually, and probably what the FA had been hoping with a group stage format, that it would try and create some fairness and you would have better opportunities for championship sides to get through to the latter stages. And it looks great at the moment because we have kind of smaller, lower budget WSL clubs and Leicester City, obviously in the championship full time now, so really investing in their team, but still in the championship, likely to get promoted, but you know, playing really nice football and getting rewarded for it. So I think it is a good advert for a competition that's been struggling, a lot of people kind of quite bored by it, or not necessarily interested in it. It's also hard to watch, which we've spoken about before. So I think this was great, and you know, all the goals in those two ties were really good as well.
Amazing goals. Yeah, I mean, I watched both of them. Thank you, FA player. Like you said, good to have the streams. I thought Palace played really well, actually. We talk a lot about Leicester. Leicester rested a couple of players and they got a big match against Liverpool at the weekend. So it kind of felt like Leicester were trying to have their cake and eat it, and eat it they did. And like you said, it was an amazing goal. Tash Flint, top scorer in the championship. We saw an amazing goal by Putelas for Barcelona, Flo. I'm sure you saw doing the rounds on Twitter. 89th minute free kick in Spanish women's football, and then to see Tash Flint do this, it was almost identical. Just incredible technique, and obviously to put you through to the next round of a cup, it just doesn't get any. But it's one of those goals where I'm like, oh, imagine if there were fans. You'd remember that night for the rest of your life. But yeah, I thought that match was a little bit low quality, but I think Palace deserve a lot of credit for blunting a very good Leicester side. But Bristol City versus Aston Villa on Wednesday, one of my favourite games of the year. And I mean, Flo, can you say anything more about Ebony Salmon? What a performance.
Yeah, and we've talked about her before and how she has such a good talent at doing quite a specific thing, which is really punishing teams on the break. So you've got to have a high turnover, sort of or quick and rapid turnover, counter-attacking style to be able to use her to the best of her ability. But incredible acceleration, a very good finish. She doesn't need many opportunities to...
Which I was just going to say was funny because Rich Laverty tweeted right before she scored. She did have really good chance saved by Sian Rogers. Amazing save. Really, really close to going out. Going in, she gets fingertips. And Rich Laverty tweeted, thing about Ebony Salmon is if she just is a little bit more ruthless, she could be one of the best in the world. And then the next two chances she gets, she puts them away. And Bristol City tweeted out ruthless on the highlights. So they're listening.
Well, also, last season, I think she, for a while, I don't think she finished the season like that, but for a while, she scored in every game that she was involved in. Mm. She was mainly...
Well, I feel like she didn't start as many... Yeah.
No, she was mainly used as a substitute last season, but she scored every single time she came on, kind of up, probably until when the league was suspended. So she's very effective. And obviously, Bristol City have their faults and some big issues. But when they can turn over the play like they did, and that assist, and now I can't remember who did it, but the back heel...
I think it's Chloe Legazzo.
Was it? Legazzo's yeah. Kind of back heel flick, which was amazing. Like, no look pass.
A bit YOLO. It was one of those
a
ones
bit
that's like...
A bit
I mean,
YOLO.
You've got to try it. You've
like,
got to try
you've
it.
You've got to try, but when you pull it off, oh my days.
Right.
To play her in, because that's all Ebony Salmon needs, is a decent through ball, and no one is going to catch her. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, she's going to beat the goalie in a one-on-one. So, yeah, I mean, great goal.
If you could only pick one, would you take the first one where she smashes at top corner, or would you take the second one where she psychs out the goalie and dribbles around her and passes it into an open net?
The psych out for me.
Psych out. The second goal for me was amazing. I mean, I do think it brings up something. I think it was Alicia and Dow on the second goal, to be fair. But Anita Sante, we've talked a lot about it this season. I think she's a much better player when she plays in midfield. I don't think Gemma Davis, especially against a player like Ebony Salmon, does her any favours playing her in the back line. When you've got a player like that, you're going up against, I just think it's a bad matchup. I tweeted at halftime, I wonder if Asante will come off, because, like I said, the some of Bristol City's best chances in the first half came from them pressing high and trying to get an Asante and playing that high line and then Asante getting beaten. So Asante's a great player. She actually had an amazing challenge that could have been maybe another goal for Salmon, where she slid in and got a great block on Salmon. It was a really good battle to watch, but I just don't think you're doing any favours against a team like Bristol, the way they set up, to give Asante that much pressure on pace, because she's not quick. But yeah, so much credit to Emily Salmon and so much credit to Villa. Like we talked a lot in the build up on Twitter in this game about the COVID outbreak at Bristol City. They didn't have Sophie Bagley, who everyone knows is a great keeper, and Haaland in goal was phenomenal at keeping Bristol in the game.
Yeah, unreal
that
saves.
Save. I mean, that was like, I don't watch handball, but that looked like a handball save. Like the way she flung her body out just to get anything on it. It really could have been 1-0, 2-0 to Villa in the first half, but they kept it in it. And amazing keeping by Sean Rogers as well, who, like I said, kept up Ebony Salmon a couple of times. You know, Ebony Salmon probably could have had about 4 goals in this if it wasn't for Sean Rogers. But yeah, a great game of football. And I think Villa deserve a lot of credit, and Gemma Davies, for trying to play good football. Their one-touch passing, their movement, they had this kind of fluid formation, sort of a 4-2-3-1, 4-3-3, but it kind of went all over the place. I couldn't work out where Diana Silva was playing. She seemed to be playing everywhere. Petzelberger, just really good football from Villa. And I think they deserve credit for just trying to play it a bit. And, you know, it didn't pay off on Wednesday night, but I think I'm looking forward to watching more of Aston Villa. We saw a little bit of Mana Iwabuchi at the end as well. And I just think, I don't know, it was a good game of football. And like you said, I think we got to take this cup seriously. We got to take these teams seriously. Just go and watch women's football. It was one of those games where I was like, anyone watching this would bloody love it. Especially after, you know, Villa got that late goal and there was a little bit of pressure. Well, yeah. I think that's everything from a pretty big midweek, pretty chunky, pretty narrative driven. So let's jump ahead and look at the games coming up, if that sounds good to you, Flo.
I think so. And it looks like at this moment, although that may not be the case as of tomorrow or this evening, we've got a full slate of WSL fixtures, fingers crossed.
See, listener, you're in for a treat, because even if we preview the games and they don't happen, you get to hear us talk about imaginary games. So
yeah, and you can also save the preview for when it gets rearranged.
Yeah, you've reminded me to go back and listen to last week's previews and be like, oh yeah, Everton, Man United.
Good content wasted.
Okay, so yeah, this Sunday, the 17th of January, it's the replay of the opening day fixtures, Flo. Did you know that?
I didn't. Thanks for reminding me.
So yeah, these are all the same matches as last time. It's weird as well, because they've got Man City as the early kickoff, which was the same on opening day. So yeah, Man City at home, fourth place Man City versus second bottom Aston Villa. It's the 12:30 p.m. kickoff UK, 7:30 East Coast, 10:30 nighttime game in Australia. I love it. This game is on Atta Football, USA, Germany, Italians out there. Go and watch it live. Otherwise, I think it's FA Player, maybe Red Button for English people. So yeah, don't miss this one. Flo, if you remember from opening day, Villa were pretty good, but they had two terrible goalie errors cost them, and it was a 2-0 loss. But it really, you know, they was a good performance. They really held City, but City have got a lot better the last few weeks. So Dubai 4 aside, how do you feel about this one?
Yeah, I think you've kind of summarised it quite well there. City started off the season a bit slow, took a while to find their rhythm, but they do look really good now. Obviously, apart from that kind of internal issue, so it'll be interesting to see how that affects them. But yeah, they look strong. They will be missing Rose Lavelle and Sam Mewis, though, won't they? So
correct. Yeah, they're out in the US.
I mean, Lavelle obviously hasn't played a huge part this season, but Sam Mewis has been really, really core to City this season. She's dominated pretty much every game she's played in.
Unmarkable.
I still think City will win, and I don't think they'll be that troubled, but it'll be interesting to see how, you know, this impacts them not having Mewis. You know, what do they look like without her? I think Villa will still struggle. Obviously, I think they've got better and they've learned a lot through those first games and those massive mistakes that they made in this game especially. But they still do love to maybe force it a bit too much, play it out from the back, which is how they got caught out against City in that first game. So, I think, you know, they're being true to their style. But I'm a big believer that sometimes you do have to kind of adapt to who you're playing against, and sometimes playing out from the back against a front three, which is, you know, probably what City are going to have, is not a great idea. So it'll be interesting to see how Villa adapt.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that is going to be the interesting thing. City obviously haven't played in a long time, said their game called off last week. Villa got the midweek game to kind of like maybe blow off some of the rust from the Christmas break. Yeah, I'm kind of interested to know, like you said, it's like, is the best thing to do stick 11 behind the ball, hope City are rusty and they can't score? Or will Villa be feeling confident, like you said, no Sam Mewis, they haven't played in a month, go out there and play your football? Because I don't know, there's something about watching Villa midweek. I know they lost, but I was really impressed with the quality of football. And yeah, I'll be interested to see if they're confident enough on Sunday Super Sunday morning to see if they can go at it. All right, moving on to the next game. Flo, this is going to be an interesting one. New old manager back in the league. Everton, fifth place Everton, are hosting bottom side Bristol, 1 p.m. Sunday, 8 p.m. on the East Coast, 11 p.m. down under, 10 p.m. Japan, FA player, wherever you are in the world. Flo, maternity Matt Beard is here to rescue Bristol right after their best result of the season.
Maternity Matt Beard, I love
maternity
that.
Maternity Matt Beard, let's make it, or Matt-ernity Beard.
Oh, very good.
If you see what I did there. Yeah, Everton have really gone off the boil. Part of me feels like if this game was the right before Christmas, we would have been feeling much better about Bristol, albeit Bristol played great on Wednesday night. So, you know, who knows? There will be no Sophie Bagley, Humphrey or Gemma Purfield, three really great players for Bristol. But we're hearing Agarola might be off to Lyon as well. So, yeah, kind of a bit of a funny one to call for me. I think Everton are really low on confidence. They really needed a refuel, pick their feet up. Yeah. Do you think maternity Matt Beard can cause an upset for the bottom side?
I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting. And I think there's a press conference literally any minute now with Matt Beard. And I am intrigued to find out how this is going to work, because obviously you're coming in and running someone else's team on a temporary basis. So, you know, the core part is surviving relegation. That's the key target, and, you know, keeping things ticking over. But then also, you know, Matt Beard has his own not only way of playing football, but also character and mentality. So I just think it's really interesting how they balance that. I think he's a really lovable character and everyone speaks really highly of him. So I think he's a great person to get in, because I think the players will probably, you know, back him quite quickly, because also, you know, if he's the pick that Tanya wanted too, then you've got that buy-in. I do think Everton, yeah, like you said, really low on confidence, really struggling. So I think it's a good opportunity, but I'm just really intrigued to see how it's going to work. You know, it's a bit like when a substitute teacher comes in to take a maths class or a French class. Like,
always my favourite classes.
Are all the lessons already planned out by Tanya? And it's like, right, for this game, we're going to do this. You know, don't mess around with it too much. Because obviously we've become accustomed to Bristol playing five at the back now and basically just sitting back and waiting for a chance to counterattack and hit it long. And you know, sometimes it works. But is Matt Beard going to try and do something completely different? I don't think so, but I'm intrigued to see what happens. So I'm going to find out, hopefully, on this press conference.
Yeah, one of us will be watching this, listen, don't you worry. and yeah, lots of love to Tanya Oxtoby and her wife, and yeah, the baby. Very excited for you. I think it was something cool, like you said, to see someone coming in on maternity leave. I was like, yeah, this is a great league. We're all just helping each other out and giving each other the space, the paid time off that we need. All right, next one, Reading hosting Arsenal, 2 p.m., kickoff in the UK, 9 a.m. East Coast, midnight, down under, FA player everywhere. Arsenal were ruthless first game of the season, Flo. You remember this one? I think it was 6-1. Steph Catley has announced she's going to be out even longer with a hamstring injury. Reading, we've talked a lot about being great in the first half, bad in the second half. But they were 4-0 down at halftime against Chelsea. Really blitzed. Do you think Reading have any chance in this? Any chance of starting better than they did against Chelsea? Or do you think this is going to be a repeat of the opening day?
I hope it's not a repeat of the opening day, because what that opening day result did do is I think it sparked Reading into action a little bit. And I think the Chelsea game last week was probably the worst they've played since that Arsenal game, because they barely had one chance apart from a few sort of speculative efforts from 30 yards out, which they often do, Reading, some of which come off sometimes. But they they need to try and get more than that, more than kind of hopeful shots from really far out. So I think Arsenal will win, but I don't think it will be as one-sided as the game on the opening day and the Chelsea game last week.
I worry about Reading just because they knacker themselves out, and like we said, usually if their downfall is going to come, it's more in the 60th, 70th minute. But yeah, I do worry that I think if they really try and tear into Arsenal and press, and Arsenal are so good at keeping the ball, you could see them getting kind of battered once their heads drop. But yeah, always keep an eye out on Jess Fishlock, queen of this league. So good to have her back. Battles, even at 5-0 down. So excited to see her running around, giving people a lot of grief. Next one up is Birmingham versus Brighton. Proper mid-table clash. My two favourite managers playing against each other. Actually, that's not true. Gemma Davies and Hope Powell are my two favourite managers. Carla Ward is coming off her tribunal forfeit from last week. Only had 10 players available. Supposedly this game will go ahead. Hope Powell coming into this one with another not very nice words to say about her players over the Christmas break. Come on, Brighton. They really trailed off towards Christmas. Both these teams flow. They like to kind of sit back and let the game unfold. They don't really try and create their own chances. They wait for errors or set pieces. Do you see anything but a 0-0?
Yeah, I do think that both teams will
Flo
have
says
a,
goals.
I think both teams will have a bit of a fight and a hunger about them. I did see a bit of news today from Emma Saunders at BBC Sport, who was tweeting out clips from press conferences, and Birmingham have sadly lost Rachel Causey. She's gone to Kansas. There was hope that her deal had been extended until February, but it looks like that didn't work out.
I don't think any of those loan deals were extended. I feel like I don't know where those rumours came from, because Daly, you know, we'll get to West Ham in a sec, but Daly's gone back as well. It feels like all those rumours about...
Well, I think I read something. I know Craig messaged me about the Rachel Causey extension, and I did see something on the club website, I'm pretty sure, that said February, that she was going to go back. But I don't know if that was based on Kansas not having their stuff sorted out, and now obviously that's all changed, and the Utah were kind of in limbo at the point that she might have signed that. I don't know, but it's obviously a shame.
Any relatively private investigators out there want to get involved and let us know what happened with Rachel Causey?
Maybe Craig can let us know what happened there. But yeah, it's obviously a big blow for them. And then with Brighton, looks like they're awaiting quite a few test results. A lot of players showing symptoms like headaches and sore throats this week. So that puts question marks over whether the game might even go ahead. So
postponement of the week nomination.
Yeah, it looks like this is probably the one with the biggest chance of not going ahead, because given the situation with cases in the UK at the moment and the symptoms they're showing, it doesn't look great. So I think it's going to be an interesting one because, yeah, both teams kind of battling it. And if Brighton do, I mean, if they can somehow get a whole team out there, it sounds like it's going to be a depleted one anyway.
One to watch. So that's going to be at the same time, the 2 p.m. kickoff, same time as Reading as Arsenal. So choose your Birmingham or your Brighton or your Reading or an Arsenal. And then half an hour later, Flo, without a doubt, the game of the weekend, the game of the season, is Chelsea versus Manchester United. Top v second. Is this the title decider, Flo? Is this it? Is this where it goes? Is this what it comes down to?
I don't think so. Ooh. Because of Chelsea's
matches.
Games. Because of Chelsea's games in, well, games.
I think they just got one. Just
they
game.
Got one because United also had one. Yeah, dropped out. Because of Chelsea's game in hand and the fact that once they've played that game in hand, like if United were to lose against City, lose against Arsenal, even just get a draw against, you know, a team, that could change everything. So I think it's going to have implications for
implications.
The title race, but I don't think it's a decider yet, because in previous years, you may have just had two teams going for the title by this point. So, you know, when it's Arsenal-Chelsea, yes, it is a title decider because it's just those two teams, which, you know, last couple of seasons it's been a bit like that. Or if it's just Chelsea and Man City or whatever, like those games become so big. But at the moment we have three, four-ish contenders who could realistically get the title in some way or another. So, you know, whether...
I love the way you said somewhere or another, like there's another way
well,
to win the title.
I mean as in like...
some alt version.
I mean as in like, you know, for a team like Man City, they look like they're a bit far behind. But, you know, Chelsea and United only have to get a couple of draws and then they're right back into it. So I don't think we're at that stage yet. But I think it is going
to
be interesting.
I just bring it up.
I think
it's
going to be interesting
to see
two teams who I think are very different to that first game of the season. United,
Tobin Heath,
much more improved.
Didn't play in that first game.
Yeah, that's true. United look, you know, so good, unstoppable at times. And Chelsea as well. I think that first game, the whole story of that game was missed opportunities, especially Sam Kerr.
Yeah.
You know, missed opportunities. Chelsea should have come away winners that day. I think a lot of people were surprised that they didn't, after the transfer window they had, they started the season with a 1-1 draw. Obviously, they've had some big scorelines since then, coming off the back of a 5-0 win against Reading. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in this one.
Yeah, it feels like it's perfectly timed. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe not with the COVID stuff, but like it feels like Chelsea are coming in hot. Man United are coming in hot. Chelsea is 61 games without a loss in the WSL. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure Craig will be reaching out if I'm wrong.
I know that they're 30 unbeaten.
Why did I think it was 60?
I don't know why you've doubled that.
Well, I'm making it 60 games or 30 games. The point is,
I know it's 30 Chelsea for sure, but I don't think it's 60. That's basically. Yeah, not sure about that.
You're right. I think it might be 2018-19 since they lost. Anyway, very long unbeaten streak. I just wonder if that's going to be the thing that goes. It was 1-1 in September and Chelsea won 1-0 last year. So Casey Stoney knows how to get under Emma Hayes' skin. And that's 2:30 in the UK, 9:30 East Coast, just after midnight in Australia. This one's on Atta Football. Americans, Italians, Germans, all FA player. Do not miss it. Flo, score prediction before we move on.
2-2.
Ooh, I'm going to say 1-1 again. Keep it very modest. Can't pick a winner. Actually, no. 1-1. Yep. And final game of the weekend, West Ham, Ollie Harder's first game in charge versus Spurs. 3 p.m. kickoff, 10 a.m. US, just after 1 a.m. in Australia. FA player all around the world. Yeah, Ollie Harder is in. Rachel Daly and Ruby Grana out. Rhianne Skinner's third game in charge, coming off the back of two wins. Alana Kennedy is here to stay. Zdorski is here to stay. Great interview with Rhianne Skinner on the Offside Rule this week, Flo. And she talked to us about wanting to get better on the ball with Spurs. And they still haven't kept a clean sheet, which is maybe asking a lot of Spurs this year. How do you see this one going? Kind of, I always think of West Ham as like a sloppy but good side. But they are now losing Rachel Daly. And I think of Spurs as a kind of cautious, but maybe they can get better sort of side. So, yeah, what do you think about this one?
I think it's going to be interesting. No one knows that much about Ollie Harder. Kind of a...
I definitely don't.
A kind of left field-ish pick. Managed in Europe, but I don't think many people have an idea about him or his style. And I don't think he's done many media interviews either. So kind of yet to see who he is as a kind of a person and as a manager. So I'm intrigued with this one. But yeah, Spurs kind of finished last year... on a good run, then had that game against Chelsea postponed, so now they've come off the back of quite a long break, but you know, boosted by those new signings.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on Rhianna Dean, Rosella Ayan, Angela Addison, kind of just to see how Spurs can and Rhianne Skinner can get this attack going. I think, like she said in that interview, Spurs maybe have not been great on the ball, especially in open play, building attacks. And I'm excited to see if they can do it. If you can do it against anyone, you can do it against West Ham. They're going to try and attack you. There's going to be space in this game. I think it's going to be a really fun one to watch. I think it's going to be hard to watch it because it's booked at the same time or 30 minutes after Chelsea Man United. So we'll probably be double screening this one with maybe just a full screen on the last 30 minutes. But should be really fun. And that is all your weekend stuff, listener. It's going to be a great weekend at WSL. First game of 2021 for all these teams, apart from Reading and Chelsea. And we'll be getting back to you on Sunday Eve, right, Flo?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, stay safe. Stay inside. Tell people you love them. Get peace of mind. Switch off your phone when you need to. And go and watch women's football. And yeah, that's it. See you on Sunday. Cheers, Flo.